Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Movie Geeks United. I am one of your co-hosts for the evening. My name is Jamie. We're experiencing some technical difficulties right here at the top of the show. Blog Talk Radio is working on ironing those difficulties out. We're having some problems with our switchboard, but I've been assured that in just a few moments we'll be up and operational. On tonight's big show, we do have director Darren Lynn Bousman. His new film is called Repo, The Genetic Opera, and this is a fantastic talent, a fantastic director, and I know there are a lot of big fans of his in wait there in the chat room and on some of these phone lines, anxious to hear the conversation we have with him. So please just remain patient with us, and we will get him on in just a few moments as soon as we fix these little technical glitches we have. I appreciate everyone joining us tonight. Stick with Movie Geeks in the next couple of weeks. Let me take this opportunity to announce some upcoming programming. This coming Wednesday, we have director Damian Harris, whose new movie is called Gardens of the Night with John Malkovich. The Wednesday after that, we continue our tribute to the films of Steven Spielberg. We'll be focusing on the film E.T., with many guests, including cinematographer Alan Davia, who also shot Spielberg's Empire of the Sun and The Color Purple. And then the week after that, on the 19th of November, we'll be tackling one of the great decades ever in the history of American filmmaking, and that is the 70s, year by year. So the first installment will cover the year 1970, and we'll be speaking to talents associated with the films Five Easy Pieces, Little Big Man, and MASH. So if you're a movie fan, that's a lot to look forward to, especially if those shows come off without any technical glitches. So just give us a few moments, and we will be right back with you with director Darren Lynn Bousman. Jerry, can you hear me? Okay, it's still not working. Jerry, do me a favor. Log on to the switchboard and see if you can work the phone lines. test this. 863, can you hear me? No, I want you to log on to the switchboard. Okay. Unmute yourself and see if I can hear you.
Okay.
What number are you on if you're already called in?
Let me call in.
Oh, okay. Okay, Jerry, I see that you've unmuted yourself, but I can't hear you if you're saying anything. It's a problem with the switchboard. I appreciate everyone's patience. It's waiting online on the phone. Mr. Bousman, if you're waiting for us, I apologize for the inconvenience. We're trying to get this fixed as soon as possible. This is a technical problem. It's the server's located elsewhere, so any kind of programming issues are done remotely, and they're working on it right now. But you have a lot of fans in our chat room. Just to let you guys know, I believe Mr. Bousman is still on the line. What we're going to do once we get this fixed, we're going to conduct the interview, and anyone that wants to listen to this on archive as well, all of this mess will be edited out. So it'll just be the good stuff, so you guys don't have to sit through all of this again for replays. Jerry, can you hear me? Okay, I believe Jerry's not responding, but I hear other phone lines working. I have a 200 area code. 200. Yes, 200.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yes, sir.
Okay, this is actually Darren. I tell you what. I have a question for you. If I gave you a number to call me, could you?
I can't call out.
Okay, then give me 1 second. No, give me a second. I'll call you right back on another phone because this phone doesn't work. 1 second. I'll call you right back.
Take as long as you want. You've been so patient with us. Thanks so much.
No worries. Give me 1 second.
Okay, bye-bye. All right. I can't get my co-host on the line, but we got Darren on the line. He'll be calling in any second. Let's do this show right now. Come on, let's do it. Everybody, it's Movie Geeks United. I think we're up and running. Let me see if my co-host is here.
Hello, Jamie.
Jerry.
You hear
Hallelujah.
Me? All right.
Hallelujah.
All right, good. I've been like trying to talk to you for like the last 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
I know, man. I haven't. The listeners haven't heard. I haven't heard. But we're all up and running now. For those of you catching this on the replay, we had some technical glitches early on in the program. Those are going to be edited out for you guys to listen in. But we have a very exciting guest tonight. So let's get started. Everyone's been waiting so patiently.
Before that, we have something very important to announce.
What?
Happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you.
No, that's a big deal. Come on.
What a birthday present. I'm ruining a segment with such a great guest tonight, but thank goodness we got it back going. Thank you.
Yeah.
All righty, here we go. We're honored tonight to welcome to our show writer-director Darren Lynn Bousman. He is the first horror director to ever have his first three major Hollywood films open up at number one, Saw 2, Saw 3, and Saw 4. Now he delivers his wildest and most daring film yet. Repo: The Genetic Opera is a horror rock opera that's already garnered quite a substantial cult following, and it's easy to see why. This is certain to be one of the most unique and intoxicating cinematic spectacles you're likely to experience this year. Where else can you witness the likes of Paul Sorvino, Sarah Brightman, and Paris Hilton belting out tunes from high-profile musicians from bands like Porno for Pyros, Slipknot, Korn, Guns N' Roses, and many others. The film opens in limited release on November 7th, and the Dynamic soundtrack is now available on iTunes. It is a great pleasure to welcome to our program Mr. Darren Lynn Bousman. Darren, are you with us?
Oh, God.
Darren?
Darren,
Mr. Bousman, are you with us? Okay, let me try this line.
Okay.
Mr. Bousman, are you with us?
Oh, God.
Look at that. All the people in the chat room, and let me keep checking this line. I believe this is his line.
Okay.
Mr. Bousman, are you there? I'm not hearing anything.
He's in the chat room.
Oh, he's in the chat room?
He is in the chat room.
Could you type to him that we're having problems hearing him? And if he can, maybe it's a different area code that he's calling under. Maybe I misunderstood it. Okay. That's the line I keep picking up.
310? Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Bousman, I have your line open. Can you hear us? And we still can't hear you.
He can hear us.
Okay.
Do you want him to try again?
That's the only thing I can think for him to do. I'm apologize to everyone else on the line. I'm having to clear the switchboard in case it's a problem with too many lines open on the switchboard, so we can accommodate his call. How you been, Jerry?
I've been okay. I thought it was my phone line at first, but this just seems to be all over the place. Okay, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, all right?
Okay, let me reboot this here.
Okay.
This happens from time to time. This has happened to us maybe 3-4 times in our history.
Yeah.
And it usually happens when we have a very important show to conduct.
Yes, yes. It's like this Murphy's Law.
Yes.
But we do appreciate everyone in the chat room, and we are doing our best to bring this to you, and we really appreciate all of you listening in.
Yeah. Are you still in the switchboard, Jerry?
No, I got out of the switchboard, because I think that was initially one of the problems early on when we had this, is that both of us were logged in. So I'm on my own, under my own profile, not the Movie Geek profile.
Bring up the switchboard again. Okay. Mr. Bousman, are you with us? That's his line. I still can't hear anything from it. Test some other lines. 973, are you there?
He's calling from two phones, Jamie.
Yeah, well, I've got seven lines here.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So try this. 830, are you with us? Nope. Got seven lines here.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So, 305. Try.
Hello.
830.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Is this Mr.
Okay,
Bousman?
Okay. I gotta figure out which phone I'm using here. Hold on. Tell me if you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay. Hold on.
So, 305.
Hello.
830.
Hello. Hey, can you hear me?
Hello. Yes.
We can hear 305.
Okay, I got to figure out. I gotta figure out because I got so many lines going right now. Hold on.
I'm using you. Hold on. Hold on. Tell me if you can hear me.
Sure, Dory. We can hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so is that work?
We're on.
We're on. We got you, Darren, and we're not letting go anytime soon.
Well,
welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I will start off by saying happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I so apologize for this. This is such a rarity, but thank you so much for hanging in there. It means a lot to us and to your fans and out here. So
I am partaking in scotch and pizza. So I'm completely
that's
fine.
Cool. That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, that
I have
awesome.
A quick. I just want to jump right to the gun here. You've made three incredibly successful movies for Lionsgate. Why are they giving you a limited release for Repo?
And that's the question. That is the question of the hour. I wish I had an answer for you, but I don't. I think that Repo is so kind of outside the box, and it's so, I guess, different that I guess they're having a problem figuring out how to market it. Or I guess their problem is I don't think that they realize there's an audience for this, and there is an audience for this. There's quite a large audience for this.
An enormous audience.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, hey guys, I'm going to try something really quick. Can you bear with me? I'm going to try to call you from the 310 number. Put this song on a hold. Don't drop me on this one, but try to pick up the 310 number calling you right now and see if this works.
Okay. I got you right there. Okay, I got a 310 right here.
Can you hear me on the phone?
I can.
Hold on, let me just.
Okay.
No, that's good.
Okay.
310. Okay. As soon as he hung up that line, his 310 went mute.
You know, Mike from Horror Movie Fan said that this is the most busiest traffic of BTR of the whole week, Wednesday night,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have the bandwidth, it sounds like, for this.
We've aired every Wednesday night for the past
year. I know, but it just sounds like they...
Okay, Darren, if you call back on a 310, we lost you. We heard you on the other one, but we can't hear you on this one. Look at
the chat room. Everyone wants to call back on the other phone, please.
Yeah, this is getting edited and re-aired.
Okay.
Now 310's gone. Let me see if this is. Darren, if you're on a line, please say something. Okay, he's not on one of those lines.
Okay, Raven Sweet is on. All right, wait.
He says, I am here. I can't, no other phones have shown up since he hung up his 310. Hold back. He is on hold. Darren, are you with us? Okay, he's not that one. I want to try every line I have.
Okay.
Darren, are you with us? Darren, is that you? Okay.
Not me.
Darren?
Nope.
Is this Darren?
Nope, somebody else.
Okay. See, that's the problem.
You're playing Russian roulette with the phone lines.
Yeah, it's like that game with the nut and the ball, or whatever, the nut and the ball. That sounds weird. You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, what happened was you hung up the line that you eventually got through on because I thought that the 310 was working. And as soon as that disconnected, your 310 went dead. So I don't know if I was hearing you through the other phone when you called them 310 and I thought it was a 310 or what.
Well, he's all right. Well, I see him in the chat room.
He's got scotch and pizza. It can't. Thank goodness for that.
I'm thinking I'm going to go pour myself a scotch to get through this.
Yeah, it's not all that bad with scotch and pizza. Come on.
No, that's the way to go. All right.
Okay.
Do you want to kill all the phones?
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay.
I'm attempting that right now. Everyone on hold. That is not Mr. Bousman. If you could do us a favor, if you could hang up just very briefly, so we can try to get our guest on the line. I'm not certain what the problem here is, but we want to get to the bottom of it. It'd be easier if we had a clean slate for a switchboard. I need to know the area code that he's calling in from, because none of the area codes he's used prior are showing up on my switchboard.
He's calling from a computer.
Oh, okay. Then he's calling from a line that I picked up that isn't.
His cell phone's not working, so.
Okay.
All right, he's gonna try something. He's
going
to call you from the hotel.
I hate for him to do that.
I know.
It's terrible. I know this is a programming error. It has nothing to do with him or with our computers or anything. Okay, I have a computer line here. Mr. Bousman, can you hear me? Okay, you can't hear me on the computer line. I have a 602 area code. 602, can you hear me? Okay. This is strange. I have an 863 area code.
He's a 718.
602 area code.
Okay.
He's 718.
That hasn't shown up yet.
Hasn't shown up.
No. We're trying. Poor guy. I know he's tried like 5 or 6 phones.
It's about to ring.
Okay.
I love this audience participation in the chat room.
Okay, that's not the number. 973 showed up. I'm waiting for 718 to show up.
It's not even ringing when he calls. He's not connected then if it's not ringing.
It's not 718. This poor guy, he's so gracious to do this with us.
He is. He's 1212.
1212. What's that? Okay.
That's
okay.
The thing he
okay.
typed in.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, there I am.
All right.
There you are.
All right. Now you're staying on. Just.
All right. There
on.
We go. I'm on. I'm on.
Cool.
And there we go. It's exciting now.
Perfect,
I'm very excited.
Phone.
There we go. All right. If I'm a little more inebriated now than I was when I originally called in, that's because of the whiskey.
That's perfect.
Fine.
All right.
That's the way we want you, Ben.
Yeah.
All right. Well, going back to what I said prior to that, happy birthday, and I'm glad we got
you.
It worked out.
Yeah.
Hey, look at the repo fans in your chat room. That's insanity.
It is.
It's a great sign.
You know what that's called? That's called dedication, and
yeah, it really
that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. You got a great group of people supporting you, man, in this movie, and that must make you feel wonderful.
It does make me feel well, and again, it just kind of furthers my case that there's an audience for this movie. And you know what? The only thing I can say to you when you ask the question of why we're not getting a bigger release is there are those that would have you believe there's not an audience for this movie, and that there is not a group of loyal fan base like we have in the chat room. People, if you look in there, like the Mag or the Batmans or the Hellhounds,
right.
I'm just going through all these, the Raven Suites. If I don't give a shout-out to Satanica, who I'm sure is there, she's going to freak out and kill me. So a shout-out to all of those. You know, because, again, they're the ones that have kept me going and kept this movie alive when so many times people thought that it was just going to kind of go away.
Yeah. Yeah. At the same time, this is a very unique film, to say the least. You're really thinking outside of the box with this one. So you've said in previous interviews that it's important for you to speak as much as possible, to publicize this movie as much as possible, because it's such a different experience. You feel like you need to give your audience a little primer before they walk in on it. And what in particular do we need to understand about Repo before we go see it?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Guys?
Yeah, we can hear you.
No, I'm just joking with you guys. Anyway.
I like this guy.
So anyway, what do people need to know? They need to know that this movie is again. I'm going to jump back to Saw, for example, and this will explain why I want to compare it to Repo. When I did Saw 2, maybe it was Saw. No, it was Saw 2. No, I'm just joking. It was Saw 3. I remember it was one of the Saws. The tagline was, "Oh yes, there will be blood." And yet I got kind of castrated by political groups and religious groups and all these people saying that you have sacrificed story to make nothing more than a gore film. And my response to that was, did you not read the tagline? The tagline was, oh, yes, there will be blood, not, oh, yes, there will be character development. I never said that.
Right.
I was
right.
Very out of the gate saying this is what the movie is. There are two severed fingers, and it says, oh, yes, there will be blood. We are telling people what this movie is right off the bat. It's a rock opera. It's not a musical. It's not a, you know, it's not a Saw film. It is a rock opera. And so what opera means is it's completely sung from beginning, middle to end. All the reactions that people do and all the actions that people do is through song. And so don't walk in there expecting to see a Saw film, because it's not what it is. You are going to sit through a 21st century opera. And, you know, I think that a lot of people walk in there expecting something different. Well, you can't. You need to, again, we've been very upfront with you.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe the people that when they made the movie, they didn't realize that. I think they were banking on the fact that I was going to make another Saw film, and that's not what this is. And you know what? I set out to make this movie, and I'm very happy with the movie it is. It's exceeded what I ever thought it was going to be. And, you know, what you need to know, though, is that you've never seen anything like it. People have drawn comparisons to, they've mentioned Rocky Horror Picture Show, and they've mentioned other things like that. This isn't Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's not. I love Rocky Horror Picture Show. My wish would be it becomes like Rocky Horror Picture Show. But the fact is, Rocky Horror Picture Show had song, and then they talked a lot, and then it had song, and then it talked a lot. That's not what this is. We are part camp, part horror, part drama, part tragedy, and I think it's kind of a mishmash of my favorite genres. And I set out to make something completely different. I wanted to do something that was completely foreign that people had not seen before. And I don't think it's been since the 70s since these type of movies really existed, the Jesus Christ Superstars, the Tommies, those type of movies.
Right.
And
those movies were of particular influence to you, I understand.
Yes, they completely were. And by the way, you have a celebrity in your chat room right now. I just saw Jake Reardon sign on your chat room, and Jake Reardon is actually in the movie.
Yeah, she's great. And she's a friend of mine. She's wonderful.
So there you go. But anyway, I set out to make something completely different, and I think we accomplished that.
Yeah, but I read reviews and write-ups on the film, and it refers to it as an instant cult film. Now, did you make it with that goal in mind? Is it even possible to purposely make a cult film?
No. Again, we never made it to be anything. Like, we didn't set out and say, hey, let's go make a cult film. That wasn't our intention.
Right.
But what makes something cult in my mind is when a group of people all have a common belief, and they are very vocal about that common belief. Now, we're not serving Kool-Aid on the message boards here and telling everyone to drink it. That's what the majority of people think when they think cult. I do serve Kool-Aid, but that I'm not making them take it. They're choosing that they want it. So,
right. That's a good point.
Yeah, so the fact is that I think that the reason that people have taken to this movie and the reason that people, kind of have taken like on your message boards right now is the fact that I'm using the fans to get the message out, and I'm not – they are – I mean, I talk to them daily. I'm on the message room 10 or 15 times a day. They run the message boards. They run the websites. They have made street teams, and I think, again, everyone feels important because they are important. You know, they are crucial to this movie's success, and I think they realize that. And I think that when I was growing up, I always wanted to feel a part of something, and that's what made me want to get involved in theater and get involved in things that I believed in. And I think that everyone that's a fan of this movie truly believes in it.
That is what's so special about movies in general when they work as this one is. It gives you a sense that it's a communal experience. I mean, those are films at their best. And so I applaud that very much. Tell me about, I know this is a very passionate project for you, tell me what about it drew you to it, why you were so attracted to this movie.
The sheer randomness of the entire movie. From being a movie geek myself, I sit at home, seriously, I didn't go out on Friday nights, I don't go to clubs and get my drink on or go to raves and break out the glow sticks and start dancing. I sit at home and watch movies. That's all I do. I've seen the most obscure stuff, I see the commercial stuff, I see everything. And, you know, there's what the movies to me that stand out, they're the ones that I can't compare to other things, the ones that are so unique and so different. They don't even have to be good, just the fact that they're different and unique is what, what drew me to this. It is so different and so unique, and you are hard to kind of find something to compare it to. And that's why I wanted to do it is, you know, when you're trying to explain it to someone, it's so hard to try to explain Repo. And I loved that about the movie. And again, I wrote down a list of movies, you know, that movies that inspired me growing up. And I would say at least four, maybe even five out of the 10 were all musicals, all rock operas. And so here was a chance that I can actually do that.
Yeah. You mentioned Tommy, but there are also some other big directorial influences for you. And mm-hmm. I've read about Gilliam and Lynch and Cronenberg.
Yeah. And
Jarmusch. Do you see these influences coming into your work, particularly with this project?
I would say no. I mean, you're never going to look at this movie and say, oh, that's like David Lynch, or oh, that's like Darren Aronofsky. But again, what maybe with Terry Gilliam, what inspired me again about these filmmakers were they were willing to take risks. They were willing to go outside of the norm and make a movie is this an R-rated podcast, or do I have to be PG-13?
Yes, go for it.
Okay.
Stay what's
on
your mind.
Good,
brother.
Because it's all about the what-the-fuck factor. And when I watch a Terry Gilliam movie, at least three times when watching any Terry Gilliam movie, I'm like, what the fuck? Same thing with David Lynch. Those are the type of things I love, because, again, it makes people question what they're watching. And I don't want to be spoon-fed. I don't think that the audience wants to be spoon-fed. So, you know, I think that's one of the main reasons that, again, this movie is full of what the fucks, from the casting to the script to all the way down.
I'm really excited about this film. And you obviously you released the soundtrack, I believe, in late September. Mm-hmm. And I want to know about that recording process. Are you intricately involved in that, and are you kind of directing performance in the recording studio?
I was there every single day because it's the single most important part of the movie. When you're doing a musical, the actors' performances are made months in advance. So Paul Sorvino and Sarah Brightman, their performance was made in the recording studio 2 months before we ever stepped on set. And so I had to be there because if I didn't like their performance, then I wasn't going to like what they were going to bring to set with me. So, you know, it was important that I was there the entire time.
Yeah. Let me attempt, because we have so many callers here on the line that have been waiting so patiently, let me attempt to pick up a couple of these questions from some callers.
I'm going to be eating pizza when you're doing that, so if I talk, I'm not this fault.
That's okay. It's quite all right, my friend.
We have 512. Are you with us?
Yes.
Hi. What's your name, caller?
Oh, Rachel.
Rachel, how you doing? Did
hey,
you have
Rachel.
a question for Darren?
Well, I was actually just calling in because, like, I'm not at my computer and I want to hear the Repo interview.
Okay,
I'll
put you on mute so you can hear the whole thing.
Bye, Rachel.
Bye, Rachel.
Oh, you
want to
talk, Rachel? Rachel, ask me a question. Hey, Rachel, you're on now, so ask me a question and make sure it's good because I'm counting on you, Rachel.
Oh, shit. Darren, if you went and got something tattooed of Repo, what would it be?
The name Rachel across my chest.
Hey, you better get that in a week.
Okay, I will get your name tattooed across my chest.
You better.
All right.
By the way, you met me in Austin, if you don't remember.
Well, I'm sure it was a lovely encounter.
I'm the one in all the Repo rolling videos here in Austin.
Oh, okay, I know exactly who you are. And guys, I encourage all your listeners to go check out YouTube and just type in, like, either Repo Austin or anything. The fans have taken to the streets and flyering everything, and it's amazing. I mean, again, it's a mini marketing team.
Yeah, I'm going to take a couple of more calls, and then I want to ask you about your education because you actually went to film school really
mm-hmm.
really close to where I live, about 45 minutes away to where from.
Where am I calling, by the way?
You are calling a New York number. That's where our show is based out.
Oh, of. Good. So I'm calling New York. So I'm not actually calling a like out of the country. So my phone bill here is going to
no,
be
no,
like,
no, no, no,
all right,
no,
good.
No, you're not. It's not
right,
you're
good.
Calling Uganda or something.
All right, good.
But I live in Florida and Jerry lives in Maryland. So we're
excellent.
Yeah, we're all over.
226,
right.
Go right ahead. 226.
Oh, she's there. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm Jessica from the message boards, Finn, and I just was going to ask, I was just going to say, are you proud?
Am I what?
I was just going to say thank you for the message boards and for creating something so awesome for all of us.
Oh, well, thank you guys for using it. For the movie geeks out there that don't know what we're talking about, the repo-opera.com, we set up to give the fans a voice. And, you know, I've been a part of a lot of message boards, but never have I seen activity like this, activity where they're on daily, hourly, any time of the night you log on, there are people chatting. And, again, there is a sense of community that's around it. I mean, even with the Saw films, which are extremely popular, never had this kind of, I think, activities in the chats and everything like that. So it's amazing to see the birth of a, you know, the birth of this kind of thing that's happening. It's amazing.
It is. It's you give us all somewhere to go, and, you know, we've all met different people and interesting people, and it's just – it's especially good for me because I've been stuck up in a small town, and I don't meet that many people, and the people I do meet think I'm strange. So to find a place where everyone else is just as strange as I am and don't think I'm – and they don't think I'm odd for it.
Well, I tell you what, I'm strange as well, and I've been strange my entire life, and so I'm right there with you.
We're all in the same boat.
We're all in the same boat here. So yeah.
You know what's amazing is, and also how you keep open communication with them on the message boards, and I think that's very unusual. And didn't you have an experience where you early on where you tried to communicate? I think it was Mr. Aronofsky.
Yes, and he talked to me, and that changed. It kind of made me actually. It was the jumping off point that actually made me decide. That said, I'm going to film school because he was so open about his experiences. And there's a lot of people out there that, again, don't go on message boards and don't talk. Some of my friends even that are directors or actors, and they forget one thing, and it's the most important thing, is in the very end of the day, it's not the studio who hires you, and it's not the production company that makes your movie. It's the fans who buy your tickets.
That's right.
Those are the ones you work for, not the other way around. And I think that, you know, if the fans turn their back on you, if the fans whatever, then there goes your career. You're not going to get the $20 million payday, and you're not going to get the front cover of Maxim or GQ, whatever it is. It's all about that. And I think that people don't give enough credit or respect to a fan base.
Yeah, and fans just they react so positively to a filmmaker that cares. And you're obviously one of those filmmakers. 602 area code. You're on.
The pepperoni. Wait, by the way, someone's asked, what is the pizza I'm eating? It is pepperoni. So that's the answer to your question, Patrick Phillips.
All right, there you go, Patrick.
All right.
That's a scoop right there.
There you go.
Let me ask you about your education real quick, and then we'll get mm-hmm. back to some phone calls to close out. You went to Full Sail,
mm-hmm.
Which is a film school here in Orlando. I say here because it's close to where I am.
Right, right.
Tell me about that experience and what it did for you.
So Full Sail, here's the deal. If people ever ask me, should they go to film school? My answer would be, well, this is actually a hard thing to say. So it's film school is all about what you make of it. I went to Full Sail when I went there, and it's grown quite a bit since I've left. But it was a weird kind of school. You went 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, any time on a 7-day schedule, which means your classes could go at 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning and carry over till Monday at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Wow.
There was no like normal school hours.
Mm-hmm.
So really you had to be ready to go to class anytime within a 24-hour period of time. That being said, it led to a lot of partying because people would have weird hours and there was parties going on. And there were two things you can do there. You can go to the parties and have a great time and probably walk away with an amazing experience. Or you can say, fuck the parties, fuck the booze, and lock yourself in your room and just read. And that's what I did. I didn't have a lot of fun. I mean, it's wrong. I had fun, but it wasn't about the partying. It wasn't about the going out. It wasn't about the nightclubs. It was about making the most out of being in that situation that I was in. Now, the majority of people that went to Full Sail had a great experience. I, however, got a great education because I didn't do any of that. Any time that I wasn't at school, I was still at school. I was watching other classes. Any time that, again, I wasn't sleeping, I was talking to instructors. And again, it made it, for me, it was all worth it. Was it worth it for my other classmates? Probably not. There was a lot of money for them to spend to not put their all into it. And so I was like, if my parents are going to spend this much money, then I better do something with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I kind of approach film school. So if you're willing to put the hours into film school and sacrifice that party lifestyle, then I say, yeah, do it.
Yeah. Let me take a call. I think this is Jake. Jake, are you with us?
Jake Reardon?
Yeah.
Jake?
Hello?
Oh, no, Jake.
No.
I got excited. I guess not.
405 area code. You're on the line, 405.
Hi.
Hi. What's your name, man?
My name is Kyle.
Hey, Kyle.
How you doing, Kyle?
Hi.
Got a question for Aaron?
Yes, I do. I actually have a question. So I watched the Chase the Morning clip, and I got to see how, you know, your special effects, and I just want to know, how did you do that with, like, so little budget money?
We actually had holographic projecting eyes that she actually put in. They actually projected out of her skull. It was painful, but Sarah was a trooper. And it was all a visual effect. Sarah Brightman did the scene normally. There was nothing there. She had contacts in. And then in post, we had an amazing visual effects house called Switch Visual Effects based out of Toronto, who were geniuses, and they went frame by frame and drew that in. And every one of the frames, they actually drew that in. It was a long, I mean, it took like, I think right at 3 to 4 weeks, almost a month to do that, like, 2-minute clip that you saw. So it was, they're amazing, and I was lucky to have them because they didn't do it for the paycheck. Maybe they don't want me admitting that, but they did it to help me. They believed in the movie, and, you know, I think that, you know, the greatest thing about the crew is the crew believed in the movie, and you always get more out of a person if they believe what they're doing. Everyone will work for a paycheck. I'll work for a paycheck. I'm going to have to work for a paycheck. But if I believe in the project, you're going to get a much better product.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree with
now,
that.
Now, did you work at all in – did you do rehearsals at all for this film?
Yeah, rehearsals were insane. We had – first off, there was a vocal rehearsal. There was 3 weeks of vocal rehearsing. And that we met with the actors individually a lot of times in, like, shitty apartments. It was really kind of unprofessional when you go back on it. We had like Alexa Vega and Paris Hilton showing up to people's like apartments with pianos. And after the vocal rehearsals, we had a month of recording the soundtrack. The soundtrack was recorded in a studio in North Hollywood. And then after the soundtrack was recorded, a month later, we had 2 weeks of rehearsal in Toronto, where the actors actually came to Toronto and did dance rehearsals and movement rehearsals, and then we started shooting. So altogether, the whole process was about 5 months out of the actor's life from all the time that was spent before, during, and after shooting.
And so how long was the shooting process?
30 days. We shot the whole movie in 30 days, which is insane when you think about it, because we shot, I think, 49 songs. It was 64 songs originally recorded. We shot 49 of them. Maybe 43 end up in the movie, 42 end up in the movie. And when you think about it, we're shooting in a lot. And when I say that, I'm not talking about little ancillary pieces of music where they sing back and forth, but we were averaging about 2 songs a day, sometimes 3 songs a day.
That's
which
incredible.
Which is insane. When you look at Moulin Rouge or Dreamgirls, they're doing a song a week.
Right.
How long were your shooting days, though? How long? I'm just curious.
12 hours. No, we only had a couple days of overtime. There were 12 hours with a one-hour lunch, so 11 shooting hours.
So you did, wait, 12 hours? That's record. That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have money for overtime. So
okay.
They pulled the plug most times at 12 hours.
Tell me what the most difficult aspect of this kind of shooting is. When you're shooting something this ambitious on such a tight budget and tight schedule, what's the most important thing for you to keep your mind on during the...
Well, what's the most difficult thing every single day of this production all the way to right now? Because, I mean, again, you're doing something where there's no groundwork laid out for you. With the Saw, it was a franchise. Okay, it was a machine. By the time I was on Saw 3, it was a machine. And that machine was moving with or without you. With Repo, it was uncharted territory. No one really knew what they were doing, including us. And it was a learning process. And I think that's what made it so hard when we're trying to get support and kind of champions behind it. They didn't know what they were championing or what they were supporting. Darren made some crazy rock opera. And I think that there was no formula. With Saw, you can base it. Well, you know, this movie was popular and this movie was popular, so Saw is going to be popular. When was the last time a rock opera was out? There's no formula there for them. And I think that was the most difficult thing because everything is based on mathematical formulas. It's a business. Again, movie business. I'm on the movie side of it, but there are those on the business side of it. And for a business side, there's no model for a movie like this.
Yeah.
And I think that's been the hardest thing.
I wanted to ask you about horror films and talking about big business. Horror films they've never gone away, but they've enjoyed a resurgence partly because of the Saw phenomenon.
That's true.
I'm not wondering about content. I'm wondering about in terms of career. Do you feel like if you start in the horror genre, you have the danger of being pigeonholed, or are there? I'm wondering that, and also, there used to be directors like the Wes Cravens, George Romero's, that built a career on horror films. I know Last House on the Left is a big influence on you, as it is on me as well.
Yeah.
Do you find that there are fewer people working in the horror genre that want to stay there and dedicate their careers
well,
to
it? Well, it's an interesting question. Do me a favor, guys. I'm not hanging this phone up at all, but I just called them. I'm not hanging up. You're not going to lose me.
Okay.
But do me
okay.
a favor. Do you see a 310 number there? There should only be one, I'm guessing. Do you see a 310 number?
I do, yes.
Okay, now that you've had success picking up phones, can you try to pick me up right now? Try to pick the 310 number up.
Okay. The 310 number is picked up.
Hello, can you hear me?
310,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay, you can hear me.
Hold on. Hold on. I think we might have solved the issue. Hold on.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, good.
Then I'm going to hang up my hotel phone so I'm not charging $8 a minute. Here we go.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
All right, good.
There we go.
Okay.
I'm off. I just hung up the hotel phone. You can still hear me.
Okay.
All right, good. All right, I'm excited. Okay, so you were asking about the horror genre, and could you just rephrase your question because that was exciting stuff, me switching phones there.
I'm wondering about the are there fewer people working in the horror genre that respect the genre enough to make it a career, or are they mostly worried about being pigeonholed? Is it a stepping stone for
those
people?
Well, I'll tell you, everyone, first off, as a filmmaker starting off in the business, you want anything you can get. You'll take anything you can get.
Right.
I lucked into Saw. Most directors aren't that lucky. They lock into a multi-billion-dollar franchise. So I really lucked out. And so to me, it was an easy thing for me to say I'll do Saw 3 and Saw 4 because, again, it's such a popular, amazing franchise. Now, you look at another sequel, any other sequel, whether it be Hostel, whether it be The Hills Have Eyes, it's not so much. And so I don't know if let's say I went off my first experience was Hills Have Eyes 2. Would I continue down that path making those movies? Probably not. But I looked into an extremely important franchise, and so it kept me wanting to stay in that franchise because, again, in a sick way, it was almost guaranteed success. I knew that the movies were good. I know that the franchise was popular, so I stayed in it. Now, would I stay in it for the next 50 years of my life? No, because, again, what happened to me was I got burnt out. At the end of Saw 4, I could barely wake up in the morning because – you know, it was fun. It was an amazing experience, but it was the same thing over and over and over again. You wake up, you go to set, Jigsaw's there, Jigsaw's dead, here's a twist. And it became a little monotonous, and I needed to break out. Now,
in all fairness, that was because I was doing the same franchise over and over and over again. I'm not sure, and I don't know the research on this, how many directors have actually done three sequels. You know, if you look at the Nightmare on Elm Street series, I think Wes Craven might have done a couple of them. He did the first one, and Wes Craven's
The New Nightmare,
yeah. But now, again, so then let's say that I jump out of Saw and I do another horror film. At some point, though, you become kind of sick of it. You become
mm-hmm.
sick of the blood, and you become disgusted by everything. And there's that need to escape. Some filmmakers, I'm sure, would be happy working in this genre the rest of their lives, always making these movies, always doing this thing. I couldn't do it. I don't think I could do it.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to do Repo, because to me, Repo was a sidestep. It wasn't a step out of the genre. It was a sidestep. I stepped to the right. I didn't leave the horror genre. I just did something new with it. And that's what I want to do with the rest of my career, is take a sidestep. So now I'm going to take a sidestep rock opera. Now, what's that mean? I don't know. Maybe it means, you know, I'm working on an action film right now. It'll be an action film, but it'll be not like any action film you've ever seen. It'll be a weird, out there, crazy action movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take a sidestep and want to do something else. A thriller, maybe. But it's going to be all within the same kind of movie. And that's a really dark, really fucked up, really not cookie-cutter version of these movies. So what I found a way is to play within the same genre, and that genre is, I guess you can call them... I don't even know what you'd call what I want to do. Here's the best example. Polanski did three movies. He did Repulsion, The Tenant, and Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
They were all different movies, but they all played in the same genre.
Right.
So he experimented into different things, and that's kind of what I want to do. I want to stay within the dark genre, but I don't want to stay within horror. And I think that a lot of filmmakers feel the same way. I mean, Wes Craven has tried for years to get out of the horror film. In fact, he did a romantic movie I think in the early 90s, he did a romantic movie, and then he went and did Red Eye, trying to get
Red Eye, he did Music of the Heart, the one with Meryl Streep.
Yeah, Music of the Heart, that was it,
that was it.
And so I think that it's a hard thing, though, because, again, the problem that I'm facing with the action movie is I'm untested in that arena. I've proven that I can take a horror movie and make it good, but I have never proven that I can make an action movie good. So it's almost like starting again at square one. And
yeah.
That no director wants to do that either, so it's a huge conundrum. Pigeonholing is a huge thing with people. Again,
yeah,
I'm lucky
to have everything. How else are you going to grow, and how else are you going to find out what you're made of, man? I mean,
exactly.
Those are the best directors, the ones that branch out.
Well, I think you have the fans on your side, though.
Yeah.
If you go to a new genre, I think they'll, given the evidence I've seen just tonight in our chat room, I think they'll follow you to the action genre. Even if you want to do a romantic comedy, I think they'll follow you.
Well, I hope so, because, again, one of the most important things, seriously to me, is not selling out. This has become more important to me recently because, again, there's a reason that I'm here right now. Not because I'm a great director. That has nothing to do with it. My ability as a director has nothing to do with where I am. It has to do with a multitude of things. Being a good director is part of it. Having a rabid fan base is part of it. There's so many things, and the fans, again, in my mind, make up, I would say, 50% of wherever I go.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, they're the one that buys the ticket. They buy the DVDs.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Let me take a couple of more calls. We have 15 lines. I'm only going to take a couple, and then we'll find out from you where we can look for Repo. And
right.
You've been so gracious, and then we'll close it out here.
Cool.
I promised 863 I'd pick up their line. 863 is actually my neck of the woods. 863, go ahead.
Hi, this is Christy from Orlando.
Hey, welcome,
Crispy. I've been following your exploits on MySpace and everything else, and on the message board. So you here is a true fan. Here is a very, very true fan who posts on the message boards, who posts on IMDb, who posts on her MySpace blog, who posts on everything. So she is one of the true fans.
Well, thank you, Darren. Oh my God, that means so much to me.
Of course.
I just wanted to know how you think you're going to be able to pull off the Repo Road Tour in 7 days. I mean, God, man, you're going to kill yourself. And I was thinking, how are the physics going to even work on that?
Yeah, I don't know. Don't ask me that because I don't want to think about it. So for those that don't know, I'm doing a Repo Road Tour. And again, so Lionsgate's only opening me in 4 cities. I convinced them to give me 2 more cities, Austin and Minneapolis. However, there's no ad money being spent. So even though we're opening in those 2 cities, unless you knew we were there, you wouldn't know we were there.
Right.
And so what I said is, fuck this. I want to take the movie out because, again, the fans have been so loyal, they should at least get a chance to see the movie. And so we picked 7 cities that we consider to be big markets. Portland, Seattle, Chicago, Kansas City, Atlanta, and Orlando. and we have picked we've picked these markets because again they're close enough that if people are driving and flying hours to see this movie, which they are, and often we had people driving from 10 hours away. We're having people fly into Vegas to the premiere. We're having a lot of fans fly into Vegas for the premiere. And I could, again, take it to these cities. And so Terrence, the co-writer,
mm-hmm.
As well as one of the actors and myself, are personally paying to go on a seven-city road tour. We're flying in a plane, in crappy planes, all across the United States. We're staying in Motel 6s, and for 7 nights, every single night, we're going to a new city and to do a new screening of Repo. And the next morning, every morning at 8 a.m., we're on another flight to another city. And again, the hope is to drum up enough support that this movie lives on past the limited engagement, the four-city engagement that Lionsgate's given us.
Is there any possibility, if all these sell out, if the reception is overwhelming, that Lionsgate will give you like at least like a like 400 like 500 theater release maybe? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Well, here's the deal. I don't know about 500, but I do know that the deal that I have struck with Lionsgate and the deal that they've graciously given me the word on, which I do believe them and I think they will do it, is they've said that if we were able to pull in the box office on the first two nights, on Friday and Saturday night, and actually Sunday as well, that if we're able to if we're able to get the reaction that I have said will happen, that they will open us in further screens on the 21st. Not the next week, but the following week after that. And, again, I do believe them. I do think they'll do it. So
okay.
Now it is me showing them that I can really do what I've said. I have to live up to my end of the bargain. And my end of the bargain is there is a huge audience for this. You just don't know it. So it's crucial to me that people show up in New York, Los Angeles, Austin, and Minneapolis, and San Francisco. Those are my cities.
Tell us the website where they can get updates on other cities.
www.repo-opera.com. And I'm going to really quickly list – I want to list this out because it's really important. If you live in Los Angeles, the Sunset 5 and Pasadena 7.
That's
if you live in Austin, Texas, the Alamo Drafthouse, South Lamar location. New York, the Angelica. Minneapolis, the Lagoon Theater. Lagoon Theater might be the most important city out there. Because there's no advertising at the Lagoon Theater at all. And so, again, they're going to be looking at the cumulative effect on the box office. So, cumulatively, the Lagoon means a lot because there's no advertising. So, again, that could hurt us if no one shows up there because, again, they look at a big comprehensive poll.
November 7th, right?
November 7th.
Okay, can I just say, I need to say something right now. Your competition is Role Models in Madagascar. You have, I mean, as far as the genre goes, and it's just, you have it all to yourself. I mean, sorry, those two films just don't interest me, but I think you have such people want something new. I think they're going to flock to it because you have the feel to yourself that weekend.
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's the other thing I'll say, and this is something I've been trying to stress to the fan. Is that there is a very, 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 very important election coming up. And I'm not talking about the one on November 4th. That's an important election. But I'm talking to the one that Friday on November 7th. And
I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah. Well, no, what this means to us is every week, every Friday, the fans are given a ballot. And that ballot is, what movie do you want to see? And the studio looks at where the fans are casting their ballot, their dollars. Now, we're in 8 theaters. So if all of a sudden they open up their email and it says, okay, these 8 theaters have sold out every single showing, they have voted for us. Fans have voted for us. And by doing that, Lionsgate will thus expand our release. Or the fans can say, you know what, I want to go see Transformers, or I want to go see Madagascar, whatever's in the theaters at that time. And then, again, studios will open up their emails. They'll say, okay, hey, fans are buying tickets to Madagascar. Fans are buying tickets to whatever the other movie is. They don't really care about this movie. So it's all about casting your vote on that Friday. That Friday, I urge everyone, that Friday, that Saturday, and that Sunday, go out and cast your votes. Show them who you want to see in office.
Mm-hmm.
Show them that this movie does have an audience.
Right.
And even if you don't like the movie, I'll be very blunt. This movie is not for everyone. Not only is it not for everyone, some people will hate it. In fact, I just got a half-star review in the Rolling Stone magazine. They gave me a half star out of 10.
Peter Travers gave you a half star?
Yes, he did. In fact, you know what? I'm going to read his – hold on. Let me read this to you. It's a really short article he wrote. This is actually one of my favorite things.
But he gave Pride and Glory a great review? That guy's got issues. Okay.
But let me tell you what he said. This is one of my favorite reviews I've ever read. I frame bad reviews. I think that critics think I'm going to get really upset by them, but I love them, and they make me very happy. The half-star review says, Paris Hilton sucks again. That's the headline of it. And it says, the idea that director of Saw 2, 3, and 4 going at Paris Hilton seems like just revenge for her punishable assault on acting. In this atonal Fox arty rock opera about a futuristic bull market of internal organs, Hilton is suitably clueless with Amber Sweet, the daughter of aria-singing mob boss Paul Sorvino. Amber trades in her organs with fashionable accessories, but a new pancreas costs money. Don't worry about seeing the movie. The repo man will tear your guts out. It gets worse, much worse. Then he goes on to basically just bash the actors in the movie. Now,
that's not a review. That's a vendetta or something. That's just mean-spirited.
Well, yeah. Paris is great.
And maybe he's upset because he needs a new liver for all the alcohol he's consumed over the decades, so he can't.
Well,
he knows he can't get it.
Here's the deal. I have great respect for Rolling Stone. They're a great magazine. He's a great critic. I get it. But the fact is, I don't know how you can watch this movie and say it's a half star. It may be not your cup of tea. You might not like it. But the fact is, I don't think it's that bad that it deems a half star. But what do I know? I'm just the director. Maybe it does. But my point is this: is that you have an option. You have an option when you wake up on Friday morning. Who are you going to cast your vote for? And what that'll do is, If they see that people aren't going to see Repo, if people aren't watching Repo, that these movies have no market, that these little weird, quirky, out there movies don't have a market. And I think they do. I mean, my favorite filmmakers, like you mentioned, Jarmusch, Lynch, these people, they all make these kind of weird, out there films, and I love them. Do I get them all? Absolutely not. Do I love them all? Absolutely not. But I will never miss them, because that's the kind of movies that I want to see in cinema.
You're speaking my language, man, because week after week, and we cover them on the show, believe me, I'm so tired of only seeing the same freaking cookie-cutter movie. I want something different. And the audience out there determines what is available to them with their dollar, and they have the power. So God bless you, man. Thank you for letting us hear that.
One last thing I want to throw out there. This is my getting off my soapbox. It's the last thing. I urge, again, the fans have more power than they ever will know they have. They have much more power. And one thing I will say to them, which I encourage all of them to do, is let your voice be heard. Go on IMDb. Post your user reviews. Post on the message boards on IMDb. Send in your reviews to websites. Because, again, you are the voice that I care about. That's the voice that I want out there. Because, again, you are the ones that are paying the tickets. I love critics. Believe me, I want the critics to love me. But again,
but you can't win them all. I mean,
I can't. I would rather win with the fans than I would the critics. And I love, again, believe me, nothing would make me happier than having a critically acclaimed movie. But if I had to pick, it's the fans that I'm trying to speak to. Movie. And so, again, let your voice be heard, guys. I don't care. If you hate the movie, go talk about how bad it is on IMDb. I don't care. In fact, scream how bad it is, but just talk about it.
Mm.
Okay, I'm off my soapbox.
Can we take one more phone call before we let you go?
Yes.
One lucky caller here. I can't resist this. Deranged Fangirl. You're on the air.
Oh, cool.
Hello, Deranged Fangirl.
Wow. Yeah.
Do you have a question?
Hi. Deranged Fangirl?
You got a question.
Okay, she doesn't have a question.
Do we have another do we have another caller?
We have many callers. 229, go ahead.
Hey, can you hear me?
We can hear you. What's your name?
This is Swift from the chat room.
Oh, cool.
Hey.
Welcome.
Jake made me call in. I just wanted to know, I heard that Ravi did not make it into the film.
Right.
I was wondering, was it actually filmed?
Ravi was filmed, and it was filmed against the green screen. And we ran out of money, and so the first things that were cut were any of the visual effects that we didn't need. And so it is in the movie. It was in the movie. The song is still in the movie for like a second, but not.
Hello.
Oh, hey.
Did we lose him?
His line just disappeared. His phone just cut off. Hang on. No, it didn't. His line's right there. All right.
Yeah, wait, Jake, he's there in the chat room. He's gone?
His line just disappeared.
His line disappeared, okay.
Yeah.
This is like one of our aircraft is missing.
There he is again. Darren?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, yeah. Your line just disappeared, man. I'm sorry.
No, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you better.
Okay, so the answer to your question was Bravi was shot. There is footage of it. If we ever get the money to finish the movie with the visual effects that we want to, I will do another re-release of the movie.
Okay.
Nothing would make me happier than pull it out. Because, again, you know, with the Saw films, they were different a little bit with the director's cut, but not much. This movie would be a much different cut because there's so much other footage that didn't make the movie. I hope, again, and that being said, this is a better movie. I really believe the movie that isn't in the theaters is the movie I'm most proud with. But being, you know, for the fans, I'd like to show them the original cut of the movie with all the scenes in it.
Yeah.
You know what, guys? Let me ask you one quick favor. Deranged Fangirl is wanting to call back because she got hung up on me as she was talking. Deranged Fangirl, can we take her call?
Yeah, as soon as it connects, I'll take it. That must have dropped both lines that were open there because as soon as it connects back, I'll bring her back through. November 7th.
November 7th. November 7th, and it is in New York, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, or Minnesota, Austin, and San Francisco. So I urge you guys all, again, I'm not promising you're going to like the movie. You might hate the movie. You might love the movie, but give it a chance because it's something different. It's something that you haven't seen before, and that's what I'm excited about, is doing something different. And I also want to say, lastly, that I don't want to sound like, again, that this angry I'm very thankful for what the producers have done and what Lionsgate actually given me a chance at this thing, but I just want to prove to them November 7th that we have a fan base and
right.
that they have a chance to make a lot of money on this and get a lot of fans and you know what, possibly even another franchise, and you guys have that power. So that's what I want to say, and I don't know if she called back in. I don't want to keep
she's
everything.
Right here.
Okay.
Deranged Fangirl, you're back on.
I'm back on?
You're back on.
awesome. Okay, cool. Actually, this is kind of a random question. It was more like, I don't know. What is the strangest thing that ever happened on the Repo set?
That's a good question. Well, there's a couple. The first was the set caught fire on Sarah Brightman when she was doing Chase in the Morning, and the whole set just went up in flames, which was... You know, talk about scary. I saw my whole world crashing around me because I was like, if the whole set catches fire, then that's it. No more movie. Well, so it happened then. Then it caught fire a second time, and there was a scene called Things You See in a Graveyard. And we had these two older women that just sang Things You See in a Graveyard. And they were wearing these long shawls, and then one of those shawls hit a flame. And we were very, very close to losing one of our singers on that. So that was intense. Trying to think what else crazy happened on set that I can actually talk about. I don't know, that's a good question. I gotta think about that. I don't know. I think the set catching fire was probably the craziest. But you know what? You know what was awesome about Repo, and again, another reason why I love the movie so much, is how kind of insane it was to walk on set every day. It was like a carnival. And what I mean by that is we had transvestites every single day. We had little people every single day. We had 7 feet tall men on stilts most of the day. We had fire eaters. We had jugglers. And we had, I mean, just insanity. And
that's
I think,
like the Jim Rose.
No, it really is. It's like the traveling circus.
Yeah,
I think that is absolutely, absolutely great. So, you know, I think more importantly than anything is, and I'll end the whole conversation on this note, we had an amazing cast. From Ogre and Bill Moseley. And by the way, I also want to give a plug out. Ogre's new album is hitting the street, also going on tour. So I would go to ogre.com and check his new album out, because it's amazing. We had an amazing cast. We had an amazing crew. And this was probably the best filmmaking I'll ever have. I mean, it was so liberating to make a movie like this. And you know what? I feel blessed to be in the position I am.
Yeah. Well, I wish you the best of luck, man.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you taking the time out tonight, and we love you. Your fans love you. Please come back. I promise there won't be any problems if you come back to us.
No,
yes,
no worries,
do.
Guys. Thank you so much for spreading the
thank
word.
Thank you, Darren. Good luck.
Bye.
Thank you, Darren. Bye-bye, buddy. All right. That's Darren Lynn Bousman, and the film is Repo, the Genetic Opera. If one of you fans out there wants to type the web address there in the chat room,
I've typed it several times.
Check it out, man. I mean, Absolutely, Jerry. We talk about this a lot. Champion things out there that break the mold.
Oh, absolutely. Speaking of things that break the mold.
Yes.
If you don't mind, I talked about it last week, but I'd just like to give a quick shout-out to something going on in my neck of the woods on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
We have this Saturday night at the University of Maryland, College Park at 7:30 at the Hoff Theater. Our very good friends, 10 Sundays Productions, Francis and Paul and Ian, have a triple feature. First is going to be, I believe it's Ian's film, Abraham Lincoln, then Paul's Cannibal Cheerleader Camp, and then Francis Abbey's Boxing Day. And this is going to be a triple feature, a Halloween hangover, triple threat, and you can get tickets at the Hoff Theater. They are, I think it's $5 for students and $7 for everyone else, and it starts at 7:30, and everyone is welcome. It's going to be an awesome time, and
awesome.
I hope to see all of you there.
That's going to be great. They're great filmmakers, and
I'll put the web address, the website in there.
Yeah,
in
please
the
do. November 9th. Robert Davi, actor Robert Davi, our E.T. tribute on the 12th, and we're back this Sunday at 6 p.m. with other great filmmakers. And on the 19th, we have our introduction to our tribute to the great decade in American cinema, which is the 70s. Yeah, and we're tackling 1970 first. And, Jerry, you haven't heard this yet. I'm going to close out on this. This is a special promo for our 1970 show. So listen in on this, Jerry. This will be good. And then give me a call. Give me a call afterwards. Here we go. Here's a little promo for our 1970 installment. That was the year of the Kent State shooting, the heart-pounding Apollo 13 mission, the earthquake that claimed 72,000 lives in Peru, and the conviction of Charles Manson. Gonna mess your mind. American woman, she gonna mess your mind. It was the inaugural year for the New York City Marathon, the Environmental Protection Agency, the floppy disk, and Monday Night Football. The Beatles ended their collaboration with their final LP, Let It Be, and the World Trade Center was born. American woman, gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna. And in the cinema, a wave of exciting new voices were beginning to take hold.
Want me to hold the chicken, huh?
I want you to hold it between your knees.
Help him, help him!
Help who?
Help the bombardier!
I'm the bombardier, I'm all right.
Then help him, help him!
American woman, stay away from me. This is the most outrageous spectacle I've ever witnessed, ever.
Game time.
I wonder how a degenerated person like that could have reached a position of responsibility in the Army Medical Corps.
He was drafted.
My God, it's a city of apes.
Airport, the year's most widely read novel, becomes today's most exciting, most timely motion picture.
Recently, 20th Century Fox had two great ideas. To make a film called Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, and to get Russ Meyer to write, produce, and direct it.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
The person has no love for himself, no respect for himself, no love of his friends, family, work, something. How can he ask for love in return?
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans they made put an end to you.
Go get it,
Roger.
No, too cute! Too cute! There's no cute!
right.
Real from the heart.
I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never.
There is an endless supply of white men, but there always has been a limited number of human beings. We won today. We won't win tomorrow.
I want you to remember that no bastard ever won war by dying for his country. He won it by making the other poor dumb bastard die for his country.
All right, that's a little taste of our tribute to the year 1970. That'll take place November 19th. Jerry?
Yeah, this is awesome.
This has been an awesome show.
This has been a really good show. I mean, despite the rocky start, it turned out to be incredible. We got to just thank everyone in the chat room, all of you.
Yes,
it's been
you
really
guys are great.
Delightful to have all of you as our guests tonight, and we really appreciate it.
You guys are wonderful. If you like what you heard tonight, go through our archives. We have some great horror programming, Texas Chainsaw Massacre material, Poltergeist, Jaws. We spoke to Lyric Bent from Saw 4, Brian De Palma. Some great, great talents in the archives if you're new to the show. And also, if you're new, you can subscribe for free through iTunes or just keep posted to our blogs and bulletins on our MySpace page, Movie Geeks United. Guys, we love you. Thanks for joining us tonight. Jerry, I'll talk to you in a little bit.
Okay,
cool. Thanks for being a part again tonight.
No problem.
Bye-bye, everybody.
213.